2011, the end of the first month of the new year. Pretty soon it won't be a new year. My guest today is Career Foo. Career Foo, the outplacement guru. But before I get to him, I want to read you something someone sent to me this week. It came to my friend, apparently through a mailing list that he subscribes to, and here's what it says. Dear recruiting professional, my name is Dr. Von Hornby, PhD. I'm a trained investigator of cults, and I'm sure it will come as no surprise when I tell you that the leading vehicles of cult recruitment today are the new social media. I was asked recently by a concerned friend, this is still Dr. Von Hornby, I was asked recently by a concerned friend to investigate a streaming audio podcast called The Recruiting Animal Show. I will be issuing the results soon in a white paper, but to get straight to the point, let me ask those of you who listen, have you ever wondered about those mysterious noises that you hear the animal complaining about on every single show? Please be aware that his protests are not sincere. They are simply providing cover for his own brainwashing techniques. Let me explain. While the animal whines about the noise, he is actually piping a 7-cycle-per-second vibration into the program, and that vibration generates an altered state which renders his audience wide open to suggestion. You won't notice it because you're not equipped to do so, but I have been trained to recognize these things, and I found myself constantly going in and out of a somnambulistic experience while I listen to him. It sounds wild, but it's true. The recruiting animal is setting you up to follow his commands. He's setting you up for personality change. Have you ever noticed how his avid fans all act the same? There's Jerry the curmudgeon, the hit girl who's always ready to pick a fight, Janice Worthington, who finds herself yelling at clients for hours after the show, and what about Maureen Sherrup, who actually likes to be called money hungry? Every one of them is argumentative and aggressive, but were they always like that? Don't you remember 2 years ago when Jerry used to be happy? What the animal did to them, he's trying to do to you too. But why? Why would he want to do that? Well, isn't it possible that some countries would like to have an army of aggressive American recruiters at their beck and call? And one thing about the animal, he never hides the fact that he isn't American. It's a big joke, isn't it? No, it isn't. And I'm telling you, recruiters, it's time to beware. That's it. That's the letter. Anyway, I'm going to thank you. Watch out, everybody. I'm going to thank you, Vaughn. That's a good way to start the year with a letter like that. This guy is obviously a crackpot, but one thing I agree with him, you better watch out for Jerry. Jerry, watch your business.
The Recruiting Animal Show.
Coming call.
Me?
Somebody did. I heard beep, beep, beep partway through your shout got muffled there.
That wasn't me.
Oh, well,
I'm always
100%
honed in when it's
okay.
Time to shine. I don't mess around with any buttons at all.
Somebody interfered, and it wasn't me. I pressed 7-0. I know about these things.
Could have been some of those subliminal deals, man.
Maybe. Let's see if our guest is here. Let's see if our guest is here. Jim Tate, the career foo. Are you present?
I'm present.
Thanks. Great. Come on. You sounded peppy on the phone the other day. Please don't betray me, okay?
I'm a little trepidatious about all the brainwashing going on here, Animal.
Trepidatious? What, do you just make that word up? It's not bad, but, you know, I know it's not. Listen, Jimmy, before we get going, let me ask you something. What would you think about a resume that had a play button on it, okay? All you have to do, listen to this, is press that button, and you hear the candidate answering all of your most important questions. He doesn't tell you his life story, just the answers to your most important knockout killer questions. Verbal Summary is the name of the product, and if you go to verbalsummary.com, you'll find it waiting there for you. I'm not talking just to you, Jim. I'm talking to everybody. Verbalsummary.com. Will you check it out after the show, Jimmy?
Absolutely.
Do you have a comment on it right now?
I guess off the top of my head, without taking a look at it, my first question would be, Animal, is how do you ask the secondary and tertiary questions? I mean, are they prompted?
Yeah, you know what? You got the inventor right here.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's why we built the tool, was because the recruiter is on the phone capturing that conversation. It's not a dial in and answer, you know, one, two, and three questions. So
okay.
you get to hear the professional recruiter dig a little bit deeper and uncover exactly what you're looking for. It's a real live discussion, not an automated thing.
So who's the buyer?
Recruiting firms.
Recruiting firms.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then your clients who you're recruiting for, when they get a resume, there's just a play button on the top. So they get to listen to your candidate describe their background.
We're moving on. Great. Thank you, Jerry. Now, Jimmy, your career foo on Twitter. I know he is career foo, at career FOO. Give us your elevator pitch.
What happened there?
Well,
I don't know. Are you still with us? It's your
turn. Yeah, I'm still with. I didn't hear the end of your question there, Animal.
Something keeps interfering here. They're charging me $30 a month now, and I get all this interference. Come on.
It's interference.
Give me the elevator pitch. Your elevator pitch. Do you know what that is, Jim?
Got it. Yeah, elevator pitch for career foo, Animal, and anybody else.
No,
is
for you.
For me?
Yeah. Whatever you want to say. But I didn't ask for career foo. I just said that's who I know you as. But what's your elevator pitch for you?
Elevator pitch is 25-year vet of HR outplacement. Grew up in Cleveland, went to school at Syracuse, worked for Union Carbide for about 10 years.
No, that's your history.
Then started a company.
Okay, look, I'll get to your history in a second. I'll introduce you this way. You've got two Twitter sites. One of them is Help for Us Workers. That's what it's called. Help for, numeral four, U.S. Workers. And the bio there says U.S.-based outplacement company helping thousands of workers and families through career transition since bubbles began bursting. We create more value by caring. We're going to challenge you on that. I've got some real attack dogs on this show for you, okay? And now you've also got Career Foo. And it's the bio there says $95 equals non-template resumes, live career coaches, job and career tools, custom search engines, recent grads to senior executives, white/blue collar, no add-ons. Well, that's a mystery. And I shouldn't have read those things because I think it confuses people. But I'm going to move away from there right now, and I'm going to ask you, what does foo mean, F-O-O?
Foo means everything. Foo in the tech world is dot everything.
Foo, I'm going to say, since you can't describe it, I'm going to tell people what it is. When you're a programmer, you know, when you're an economist, you use the term widget. Any kind of product, they're producing widgets. It's just like a placeholder word. And foo does the same thing in programming. Instead of using some word you don't know what to use, you say, it's a foo, an F-O-O. Am I right about that, Jim?
You are half right, and the insignia for foo, the O-O, is a turned eight, which is the international sign of infinity.
Yeah, okay, and so why did you choose that name, Career Foo?
I didn't choose it. Some other folks chose it that are a lot smarter than I am.
Okay, then are you targeting
Then they're not Canadian, probably.
Are you targeting tech people with that? Okay, look, well, I'm going to move on. The show dies early. You know what? He's choking, Jerry. This guy was hot on the phone when
I was
talking to him.
Also, as
yesterday.
A side note, I'm noticing, Animal, there is no animal activity on Twitter. Is Maureen here?
I don't know. There's only five people. Like, I don't know. Man.
Jeremy, are you here?
I'm here.
That we're on.
You can do that, Jeremy.
Okay. Don't interrupt yet. I just want to go through this guy's history. Now, give us your history very briefly. You come from Cleveland, am I right?
Yes, came from Cleveland, went to the University of Syracuse, went to work for Union Carbide, did labor relations and HR generalist type stuff, then got recruited away to Allied Signal, became a plant manager, more of an operations guy there. Decided.
No, that's not what you told me. You're from Allied Signal, you were sent to Tennessee. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I was recruited to Tennessee away from Union Carbide by Allied Signal. So it's
okay,
a twofer.
And then when you went to Tennessee, you became a plant manager. Am I right about that?
Yes.
And I found that amazing that they made an HR guy a plant manager. You didn't find it that surprising.
Well, I went down in a twofold role, Animal. I went down to manage a pretty good-sized union facility here in Knoxville that made seatbelt components. Right next to it, they were starting a joint venture, and the joint venture was to manufacture airbags. So I was put on point with that, and as that thing grew, I was sort of put into the – not sort of, I was put into the plant manager role, and that thing grew, and then ultimately a company called
– You know what? You didn't answer my question, okay? I said, why would they put an HR guy in a plant manager role?
Well, because the primary role of the first person in that seat was going to be to staff it, to design it organizationally, to make sure it had the right kind of feel to it that was going to be, you know, in concert with what the Atlantic Research Company and what Allied Signal wanted together.
Let me tell you, I don't want to scare you, but you're choking. Yesterday you told me that they put you in that position because you were very good at metrics. Am I right?
Yes, you're right.
And you know what? You told me yesterday that you're pretty cocky, and you don't sound too cocky today.
You should have just recorded that call, man, just played that.
Yeah, I should have. Okay, now look. So what happened there? You said Allied Signal sold that business. Am I right?
Yes, you are.
Okay, and then you became the global VP of HR for another company, a $2 billion business. Am I right?
Yep.
See, I just want to set it up so people think that you have some credibility. Now,
this guy's big win, man. I like that.
Yeah, you took that $2 billion business and you restructured it down to 40 people. Am I right?
No.
Okay. Tell me where I'm wrong.
We took it from 89 locations to 40 locations, not 40 people.
Okay, but you cut it down quite a bit, right?
Right. Stop choking.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And then you realized that you learned a lot about outplacement in that process. Am I right?
You are right again.
Okay. And what did you realize? I'm teasing everything out of you. What did you realize after you did that? Yeah, you had a light bulb went on off in your head.
Well, it was one bulb, but there were a lot of thoughts there, Animal. I mean, I realized that I didn't want to spend that amount of time away from my family anymore. Realized that if I was going to work that hard, I might as well do it for myself. And I realized that the outplacement industry was a low-volume, high-margin business, which meant I could make a lot of money doing it if I figured out where to do it. Just so happened that there were no national players in the Knoxville area. There were a couple other boutique firms. Did some research on them, decided to start an outplacement company, and then sort of thought about flipping the model a little bit instead of focusing just on executives to go ahead and start looking at how we might do hourly people as a part of outplacement. And create more of a...
Now, you told me, you said you realized that hourly people need this service more than the executives. They weren't getting it, and the executives were. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a part of it, Animal. I mean, that was a part of it, for sure. And that's when we zeroed back into the automotive industry because we were looking at... Or I was looking at used car dealerships that had, you know, three-year-old used cars in it. And when I was a kid, a used car was 10 years old. And so leveraging off the networks that we had inside of the automotive industry, we started back into Detroit and hit Ford and Chrysler and GM and TRW and Federal Mogul and Arvin Meritor and a bunch of other suppliers along with the UAW constituents and started pitching them on, if you're going to go through these massive restructurings, you got all these UAW folks that, you know, they don't know how to construct a resume. They don't know how to, you know, network and leverage themselves and uncover hidden jobs and negotiate their compensation and do all that kind of stuff. So that's what we started selling. And instead of, you know, selling $35, $45, $55, $100 outplacement packages, we started selling them for $800-$900 and shutting down 2,000-person plants.
Okay. Now, we're going to go into the details of what you do, but I got another question myself first. Let me see if anybody else has a question at this point.
No.
Yeah, I'm confused.
Kathy Manis, go ahead.
I'm just confused. I'm
about
well,
what?
That's not his problem. Okay, what are you confused about? Is this a therapy session?
No, I'm confused about exactly what he's saying he does. So, in other words,
we're going to get to that.
When he was saying what he did, not
what
he does.
What he does.
We're getting to does.
This is what he does. No, when they set up, when a company is going to close a plant or lay off a lot of people, he takes care of those people. He helps them transition into the unemployment.
We've been learning about the journey.
Okay, we're going to go into the details. He's an outplacement company. He's an outplacement, Kathy. Kathy, do you understand what that is?
I guess I'm not understanding it.
You just sit tight, and he's going to tell you in a few minutes. Now, there's something interesting I'll just make a note of here, that Jim thinks his company or his kind of business is on its way out. He thinks it's going to go through a big shift, and so he started a new company called Career Foo. So what we're going to do now is talk about his current business, and we're going to move in the end towards the future. Okay, Jim? Is that all right?
Yeah.
Now, Jim, I want to say something else before we get going. There's been a big hubbub in the news recently about Chinese mothers. They call them tiger moms and claim they're too tough on their kids. But if you're a recruiter, sometimes you need a tiger in your tank when you can't find the people you need on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. That's when you need Maureen Sherb. She's the tiger mom of telephone sourcing, and she'll give your search a little tough love. You can find her at namesourcer.com. Namesourcer.com. Okay, thank you. Now we're going to go into the details of his business section, right? I'm going to read through some of the stuff you've got on your website, and I'm going to ask you to elaborate. Is that okay, Jim?
Yeah, which one are you going to first?
You know what, Jim? You just listen to me. You should know this stuff, okay? You don't betray me. Don't betray me, Jim. Number one, you offer integrated strategic planning for internal and external staff. What does that mean exactly?
What... still there?
Oh, whose phone is that? Is that yours, Jim?
No, I don't think so. I'm on a landline.
Okay. I'm here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What it means is that most of the clients that we do work with, we are engaged with them talking about their desire to go ahead and shutter a facility or a number of facilities about 6 to 9 months ahead of the actual announcement of the plant closure or the divisional downsizing or whatever it might be. And we're talking to them about, you know, the various stages that they're going to have to go through, from identifying key employees within the organization that they need to retain, to who they need to communicate with within the federal, state, local government constituencies, how they want to communicate it, who they want to communicate it to.
I was so happy when I spoke to you. I said, this is what I should do all the time. Talk to the guy in advance. Find out what he knows, okay? Put a fire under it. Yesterday, I was so impressed. This is what you told me. You just laid it out so clearly for me. A company decides they're going to lay off a bunch of people. They notify you 6 to 9 months ahead of the layoff, right? And I said, Jim, how do they know to call you so far in advance? And you said, Recruiting Animal, they have longstanding relationships with me, so they have time to tell me. Is that true?
That is true.
Okay. I had a question, though. Have you ever been called in at the last minute?
Yeah, we have. Do you want the example, am I still on the yes/no leash? I don't know when to run forward.
Okay, you know what? I'll let you go.
That's a reasonable question.
You know what? But I'll ask him that after. I'll let him tell us what he normally does, and now here's what we'll do. I'll let you talk, but since I know what you're supposed to say after you're finished, I'll say what you miss. Is that all right?
That'd be gravy.
Now, you say on your website, but just loosen up a bit. I know it's hard. You say on your website.
I don't want to be brainwashed.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm not making you sing. You can thank me for that. But if you'd like to, I think it might be a good idea. Anyway, you said on your Brainwash website, you said, here's what we do. We map out the process for the reorganization. I notice you always use the term reorganization instead of layoffs. Is that deliberate, or are they really reorgs?
Well, it depends on who the client is. I mean, for the most part, they're organizations. I mean, they're not really getting out of the business. Very few of them do. They're taking the business to another part of the world. And that may mean domestically within the U.S.
You gave me a great example, Robert Bosch. Can you talk about that one? That sounded like a very good example. How about we talk about that?
Sure. They decide that they've got 8 manufacturing facilities inside the United States that are primarily focused on original equipment manufacturing for the big three and a couple others, some Hyundai and some Kia and some Mercedes and those guys. And they decide that they're going to exit that business, and they're going to stay in some electronic security, some appliances, some other things, spark plugs, filters, windshield wipers. But for the most part, they're out. So they take those 8 locations, and they figure out that they're going to move them to a couple of different countries, for the most part Mexico, some in Malaysia, some in South Korea. So we have a number of conversations over a 6-9 month period laying out everything that they're going to need to do to make sure that that happens smoothly, which suppliers are going to have to be communicated with, when are the contracts getting turned off with them, site selection studies in other parts of the world, who's on point for those, again, the key employees that they need to retain, how is this going to impact the communities in which they do business, how do they want to maintain their image. Although they're a private company, we work with some large public companies that get very concerned about the image that they're going to be projecting out to the consumer as far as what's happening to people when they get laid off. They get concerned about violence. They get concerned about security. They get concerned about...
Okay, so let me put a break here and just review. So everybody, you're talking
That's
real fast. And I'll just say, so what you do when the company decides they're going to send all their manufacturing to Mexico, Malaysia, China, and Korea... You sit down with a division head. I'm not sure what a division head is. You'll tell me in a second. And you discuss the impact to employees, retirees, suppliers, the relationship to the media, and what they have to do to maintain their brand. I got the question, who's the division head, and what do you have to do with the suppliers? I don't understand that exactly.
Well, the division head is usually a VP of operations or a business unit president, somebody like that, someone that's got full P&L responsibility for a product or a large component of a greater product. As far as communicating with suppliers, there are a number of people, not just suppliers, but retirees, people that are going to be impacted by this. If you're manufacturing calipers for brake systems, there's a whole bunch of little suppliers. You got tool and die machine shop people. Those people are going to get cut off. And so there's going to be an impact not just directly to a 800-person manufacturing facility, but probably another ancillary 1,600, usually 2-for-1, employees out there. You got people that bring food. They got people that bring uniforms. They got people that bring office products. They got people that bring all kinds of stuff as raw materials into this facility, generally within about a 100-mile radius of wherever that plant is. And all of those people are, for the most part, going to be negative impacted when something big happens like that.
What's the significance to you, though? They're not your clients.
Yeah.
They're not our clients, but there are situations where we can start working with the economic development people, the private industry councils, the chambers, to help identify potential replacements for that facility. So if we have a facility that goes out, we might be identifying another South Korean auto supplier that may want to supply parts to Volkswagen down in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and they may be looking for a facility, and we find that out through the private industry council or some of the large real estate people that we network with, and they may be looking to move their operations from wherever they may be or startup operations if they don't exist yet into that facility and hopefully re-employ those people.
Let me ask you that. That's something I've always been curious about. How do you find out who's going to be building a plant near a certain location, let's say near Toronto or East like Knoxville or let's say Fort Worth or Columbus, Ohio? If you want to find out what's going to be coming, Akron, Ohio, whatever, how do you find that out?
Well, there are typically people in most communities that are part of a chamber of commerce, as an example, as a starting point. And they have spin-offs that are private industry council, manufacturing associations, economic development groups, agencies within a state or local government that are responsible for recruiting companies to a particular area. And what those folks are focused on, they literally take trips to China and to South Korea, and they go and talk about you know, the opportunity they might have. They have low tax rates or provide tax abatements. They got low utility rates. They've got an educated potential workforce. They don't have unions. They got good administrative law judges that don't, you know, slam them on unemployment insurance or workers' comp stuff.
Sounds like great countries to do business in.
Well, what they want, they're selling their county. They're selling their city. Is what they're doing, and they're literally, I mean, if you, the Blount County, Tennessee is a county over from Knoxville, and they literally have an extension office in Beijing trying to get business from China to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Cool.
Is the chamber going to tell you that?
Let me ask you, I want just a Janice, I'll bring you in a second.
Okay.
Let's say Jerry lives near Fort Worth, Indiana. If he wanted to find
it's
out
Fort
for
Wayne.
Purposes,
it's Fort
Wayne.
Fort Wayne.
Fort Wayne. Sorry, Fort Worth is in Texas. Gosh. Sorry. Anyway, Fort Wayne, Indiana. If he wanted to find out, you know, who's coming to that area in the next couple of years so he could approach them and say, look, you know, I'll recruit people for you even before you get here, how would he go about doing that? What would you do if you wanted to recruit in Fort Wayne and you wanted to find out what's coming down the pipe?
I would go to the Indiana.gov website, and I'd find out who's probably the person in charge of revenue enforcement for the state of Indiana, or the, you know, the commissioner of finance for the state of Indiana, and I'd go through his potential tree on the website and figure out who's responsible for economic development for the state of Indiana. I'd call that person, and I'd say, hey, I noticed these are industries that are old and antiquated and dying on the vine. What industries are coming in that are on an incline, and what can I do to help? How can I get my name out in front of companies that you're working with to tell them about the highly qualified people in Fort Wayne and how much they would like to work here? And I will help provide them those people if and when they're ready to come. And we've been on a number of sort of little tours where these companies come from China over to, or from other places as well, come to Knoxville, and we're part of a welcoming committee, and we shake their hands and bow and all that happy horse hockey, and then we develop a relationship that way so that when they come here, you know, from an outplacement perspective, they love us because we're providing them free people, but we develop that relationship over a period of time, and ultimately they have to lay people off, and we get outplacement business from it.
You know what? Carla Porter says on Twitter that she said he's talking about my job at the chamber. She's in Pennsylvania near where
sure.
the office is. And,
yeah.
and she says that's what she – I didn't know that's what Carla does. You might want to talk to her if you get some action happening in Pennsylvania. Now, that was of interest to me. I didn't know anything about it. Janice, do you have a question still?
Yeah. Is a chamber going to tell you who's leaving?
No.
Okay. Then how are you finding that information out if it's not from a chamber? Or is a Department of Development going to find that out? You're going to find out from a development director who's coming in, not who's leaving. I'm interested in, again, how you find out who's leaving. Who's going to tell you that?
We typically find out the people that are leaving from the actual client companies. We've been doing this a long time, and so they'll call us up, and we're actually ones that will help them craft letters that will go to the mayor of a particular city or county saying, sorry, but we're out of here. Most of the large companies won't even give a heads up to those folks prior to the departure because it's really messing with their whole tax base, and they want to get out of town as quickly as can, but still want to maintain a good public image, and that's a real paradox for them to manage.
What do you do? I have another question. What do you do to implement damage control for a company that's laying off 1,000 people and hitting the road? What kind of damage control? I'm interested in that. I'm interested in what you charge for your services to do that.
Yeah, we'll get to the charges, but what do you mean when you say damage control? Maintaining their brand?
Maintaining a positive image.
Yeah, okay, that's their brand. Jim, do you want to tell us about that?
Sure. I think there's not much you can do other than, I think from a company's perspective, is try and do the best you can in terms of communicating what is really happening so that when the plant manager or the person in charge of facility stands up and does the actual announcement, it's short, it's sweet. He's not promising maybes, could-bes, might-be, we may keep it open, any of those kind of things. The press releases are very concise. And then what
okay,
do...
Let me go there for a second. You told me when it gets close to the...
Animal, just let me finish one more piece of the answer to the question, if I might, because I think it might be important.
Okay. Don't be frustrated.
Well, I'm not frustrated, but I think the one of the things that we do when we go in, and let's say it's the day of the announcement, is we do post-termination counseling. And so we get the groups of people, usually 15 to 20 people in a room, and we will talk to them, or our consultants will talk to them over their three shifts and say, look, the worst thing that you can do is go out there and say, I can't believe this company did this. You know, what a bunch of SOSs and all this other kind of stuff. There will be cameras out there. There will be microphones out there. That is not what you want to do. No one is going to want to hire somebody with that kind of attitude. What you got to do, as difficult as it may be, is to go out there and say, look, it's disappointing. It's a tough business. I understand that. Still, I'm thankful we were able to work there. They helped put a roof over my head for a number of years, and I got some great new tools in my toolbox, and I'm looking forward to putting them to work for somebody else. Who do you know? And you get enough of those out there, and you do some work in pastoral outreach and going to churches and, you know, mini meetings with spouses, that can help. Hopefully
okay.
That answers
now,
your question.
Now let me just walk through that a little more slowly. What you just said, I don't know whose phone that is, okay? What you just said is that you're coaching the actual plant employees to make statements to the press. Is yes or no?
Yeah. They're going to find them in the
okay.
bars. They're going to find them in the restaurants, the coffee shops. They're going to wait outside at the gate when they leave. They're not going to escape them.
Okay, because you told me that when it gets close to the layoff time, you craft speeches for the managers, and you tell them, these are the things you have to say, and
right.
these are the things you should not say. And so
right.
I said, what do you have to avoid saying? And you said, just so you did it, you gave a short version, but you said, you know, they can't say, oh, if we had it our way and the corporate office wasn't making the decision, we wouldn't want to move. Just like you said a minute ago, they can't give false promises and say,
right.
this is a temporary move, and if there's an opportunity to repatriate, they're going to be back. So they have to
mm-hmm.
clearly
mm-hmm.
not be, they have to be, they can't soften the blow that much, can they?
No, they can't.
Okay. And when what they have to say is, it's just like what you told the workers to say. It's a business decision. It's unfortunate. What would the manager say?
Well, basically, the manager would say that. I think, you know, prior to the closing, we're going to engage with the senior managers and some of the others that are going to deliver messages on a more one-on-one basis and take them through how to effectively communicate the termination to a smaller group of employees. And those may be salaried, exempt, individual, you know, engineering contributor type people. And that's where in those smaller environments you get more of a propensity for a manager to say things like, you know, your termination date is X, but if I had my way and HR wasn't such a bunch of babies, you know, we'd make it Y. And so, you know, there's a lot of things like that that can get said in a smaller environment. We coach the managers through that. But on the big project stuff where you're going to have news cameras there, you got to find a way. And always you're going to have people that are going to say bad things. And unfortunately, there's violence that occurs sometimes. And people come back and they, you know, they try and set fire to pallets out in parking lots. So you just kind of have to manage through it. And usually once you get first through the first 48, 72 hours, things sort of settle down. People go back to work. They realize that the company is going to try and provide them, you know, severance and continuation of benefits in some fashion. They got retention packages in place. They still want to meet the customers' expectations. And the best way for them to get another job is to finish this one in a good way and go through the outplacement and get on with the rest of their lives.
Now, you stress confidentiality on your website, and I asked you why. What does that mean?
Well, the last thing that any client company wants out there is the fact that they're leaving or they're getting out of business or it's a, you know, they're in trouble in some way, because one of the first things that happen when that leak starts getting out is obviously the competition gets all over the key people inside of the organization, starts recruiting them away. And so they need for us to keep our mouth shut as we go through that process and handle it all confidentially and make sure that any follow-up communications are handled quietly as well.
Okay, you told me a lot of people would all of a sudden, if the word got out, a lot of people would suddenly get bad backs and carpal tunnel syndrome. Are you on a portable
yeah.
phone and coming close to your computer?
No, not at all. I'm on a other side of my office on a landline, not
man,
near.
Man, this guy's a professional animal. He's not blowing
well,
us. It's one of your
making
one of your
noise
callers,
on the
man.
Line as usual.
Mom, is that you with the cordless phone?
Yeah. Oh, we've got her.
Mom.
We've got her.
God.
Okay, I'm going to bring in the boy wonder. I'm going to bring the boy wonder in a minute. Okay, but listen, you. What about this carpal tunnel syndrome and the bad backs? I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, a lot of times what happens is that you know, if an announcement comes out, you have people that are scared, and they look within their community, and they don't see that there's another company in the area that's going to pay them at the level that they think they're worth, even though they've already developed a significant entitlement mentality and got, you know, gravy benefits and all this kind of stuff. So all of a sudden, they get a bad back, they get a bad wrist, they get migraine headaches, and they file workers' compensation claims. And they look for settlements, $3,000, $5,000, $8,000. I've seen them as high as $80,000 just to make stuff go away. That's very difficult to prove. And the challenge for companies when they're going through this time is that even though a plant is closing, they're still required to carry the workers' compensation insurance, and their premium rating is based on their previous year's experiential rating. And if they have a plant closure and they have a bunch of people that get hurt, that rating gets factored into their next year's premium, which means their insurance premiums go up through the roof. So one of the things we have to keep a very close eye on are those EAP type things. We have people, and our consultants, you know, keep a pretty close watch with the HS&E people, and obviously with the employee assistance program people, because you get substance issues and those kind of things spike up when this kind of activity occurs. And
okay, let me move on. That was enough. Thanks. You also said, I asked you, I said, you know, you're helping these guys make these announcements, all of these communications consulting that you're doing. I said, don't these companies have their own internal communications departments?
Yeah, they do. They have, you know, pick on Bosch again. They have a corporate communications office out of Chicago. And when we first started doing a lot of work with them, they're great with press releases and communications to investors and those kind of things. But they didn't have a clue, just because they hadn't been involved in it, and how to communicate and the different levels of communication when you're going through a plant closing. So we would draft things for them. They'd shoot it back and puke all over some things and say other things were great, recraft it again. And so we just help do that. We help write the plant manager's speeches, because you might get a plant manager that's, you know, rambles on about things. You keep them on a pretty short leash and stick to the speech, and we craft those things with the corporate communications, press releases that get emailed or faxed to the local newspapers and radio stations. We do the same thing there.
Okay, and you told me as well. Sorry, somebody have a question?
No, it's like HR still needs recruiters. It's the same thing. They can't do it all. I can see his point.
Okay, and thank you.
I got
and
a quick question, Animal.
Go ahead.
Do you ever facilitate these moves on the front end by studying the marketplace, and or is it all inbound? They get in touch with you to say, hey, we're making this move, or do you study the marketplace and say, hey, you could we can help you through this transition? And in other words, do you ever facilitate these closures yourself, or?
Ew.
No. If I understand the question correctly, Jerry, we don't go to a company and say, hey, look, I think it's time for you guys to close because the industry's dying, or anything like that. We've been doing it kind of long enough with enough of the companies that do it or are willing to pay for it that they, you know, that they know who to call if they want us, and we go from there.
Okay. And the thing is, I was also surprised. You said you guys coach the like the guys in the plant on how to manage the plant when, you know, they're taking the machinery out of it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's just basically a managing and transition or managing change. You've got to think about things from a process standpoint and a system standpoint, and you've got frontline supervisors and group leaders and those kind of folks. A piece of equipment's going to leave, or a team of employees are going to leave, and so you just lost a chain in the internal supplier-customer relationship. How are you going to process map the as-is and the to-be and make sure that the customer is not going to be negatively impacted because we just moved a big drill press to Aguascalientes, Mexico? And so that takes a little bit of time where, you know, you kind of just talk about it as, you know, just literally do a process map. You know, here's where we are, here's where we need to be, the piece of equipment's going out, and you just take them through that. And most of the organizations that we work with, you know, they've been on the TQ bandwagon since the mid-80s, and so people understand what a process map is and activity-based costing and Six Sigma and all that kind of stuff. So it's not hard to do. It's just a reminder kind of thing.
Okay, so I asked you, when you said that, I said, well, who are these consultants? I thought your consultants teach people how to write resumes and do interviews. And so want to tell us again the structure, how many people you got in your company, and just you know, no details. And then the size of a team that'll go into a company that's going through this reorg, and what their backgrounds are that enable them to do all these different things.
Sure. Well, just to be consistent.
Are you having fun? It doesn't sound like it to me.
Am I having fun?
No,
I'm
you don't sound like you're having fun.
I'm kind of pissed. Oh, I can't swear. I'm looking out the window.
Pissed is not bad.
You can say pissed.
Pissed is not bad.
I'm in Knoxville, and it's snowing, and I'm just...
That's not my problem. I'm in Knoxville.
I know. Well, you asked me while I was a little down. I'm looking out at snow in Knoxville.
Yeah, well,
I don't believe you.
You
know,
I don't believe you. Yeah, okay. But anyway, answer my question then. Go ahead.
All right. So we've got about 40 to 50, depending on the time of the month, consultants. They're all 1099. We only got 3 employees. We used to have a lot of employees. Healthcare got too expensive, so we flipped everybody to 1099s. They probably do about 85% of their annual work with us.
Yeah, but how many of those people, let's say it doesn't matter whether they're full-time, all the contract people are working for you almost. That's their main job, right?
Yeah, about 85% of the time. Yeah.
So how many people are there total?
43 today.
Okay, right. So
next week it might go to 45 engagements. You know, week after that it might be 39.
Yeah, I said no details. Didn't I?
Well, I don't know if you're being sarcastic.
I'm not being sarcastic. You got a company between 40 and 50 consultants. It's much larger than I expected. What size of a team? Was it this Robert Bosch project? How many people went in to handle that?
Again, it fluctuated. Typically 5 to 7. You got a project manager, and the project manager is responsible for coordinating, scheduling, making sure that the operation's not interrupted, the customer's satisfied. All those kind of things have a lot of details. You got first, second, third shift. You got, you know, swing shifts. You got maintenance departments. They schedule all that out, make sure the consultants are then aligning with those classes. They're looking at, you know, people that can't read. They're looking at people that can't write, figuring out how we're going to deal with them. You got people that are on disability. How do you manage them into the program? And then you've got senior consultants and consultants. And the senior consultants primarily work with the executives, the managers, salaried exempt, in some cases non-exempt personnel. And then the other consultants work with the hourly employees, and they deliver the outplacement services across the board. The other thing.
Okay, you know what? Thank God I spoke to you yesterday. Okay?
And just to clarify, is this all under the Career Foo organization?
No.
No, it's under tell your company name and the website.
Yeah, the name of the company is Outsourcing Partners, Inc.
Maybe you don't want to tell.
No. The website is myopi.us.
Okay.
Myopi.us, okay.
Yeah, anyone can click it on the web. It's on my recruitinganimal.com, recruitinganimal.com.
And your website is a nightmare.
Yo,
can't find anything over
it
there.
It says his company, Jim on Twitter. Jim, his company. Just click that, and you'll go to his site, and you can see all kinds of stuff there. Okay, now listen, Jim.
Did you think I really looked like Kill Bill, Dave Carradine?
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Such a tragic end to his life.
Yeah, it was.
Let's not talk about that, okay? That's not the topic for this show.
Tackle.
Jerry.
How did he die anyway?
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
okay.
I got another question.
Jim. Yeah, well, wait a second. I just want to say this Travis, right?
Yep.
That Travis? Okay, so just hold on one second, and I'll bring you in. I just want to know, these consultants, well, the reason I asked was, how do they know so many things? And you told me that they come from various backgrounds. I'd like you to tell us a few. But also that they all know about production. I was amazed about that. So you go ahead. Talk about it a bit. What's their backgrounds?
It's a varied background. They're all have some component or all of operations, finance, HR, and they're all very good process thinkers. They all manage systemically. And so they come from automotive. Obviously, we've got a number of former plant managers that work for us. We've got HR people that have come out of automotive. If you're an HR person in automotive, you probably are a pretty good business person that just happens to manage an HR function because it's been such an aggressively dying industry. You had to do a lot to survive. We got people that come out of the food service industry, people that managed large grocery stores and things like that that are very layout-oriented. And so they can give a lot of good coaching and counsel to people inside these facilities when things are changing relative to capacity analysis, relaying out equipment, equipment and people and making sure that
so these
good
guys can just
flow.
Walk into a plant, even if they were in HR, they can walk into a plant and say, you've got to move this here, you've got to, you know, change this organization. They can advise the plant manager on manufacturing engineering type issues.
It wouldn't be quite as abrasive as that animal. It would be more, you know, they develop a relationship. They're not going to start moving equipment on day one. They're going to go through orientations. They're going to start knowing the people, and they're going to start going out to dinner and building a relationship, and they get to know the background of the project manager or the senior consultants, and they come to understand that they have good operational backgrounds. And
so you specialize in automotive.
We do a lot. We do more in automotive than anything else. So we've done a lot of retail.
Okay. And the consultants or subcontractors that you're using, they primarily come out of automotive themselves. Is that correct?
Automotive and retail, yes.
Okay. I'm going to do an ad for Janice, then we're going to go back to Travis. She's the Ma Barker of Job Search Coaching. Janice Worthington is giving a free webinar tomorrow, Thursday, January 27th, on careerboard.com. Careerboard.com. Am I right about that, Janice? Careerboard.
You are correct.
Okay. And Travis, question.
Yeah, I actually looked up the wiki on this outplacement, $4 billion a year industry. When a company hires you, that's immediate positive spin for them, isn't it? If you're helping transition their employees and so forth, isn't the very premise of coming in and doing what you do positive spin for the company?
Yeah.
It's a sell point.
Gotcha.
Okay, so now comes the question. With all this consulting stuff, is what you really do teach people how to write resumes and handle interviews?
All right.
Is that a yes?
Well, is that a question? I mean, you made a statement, so I mean.
Jerry, you asked him. Jerry and I talked about you before the show started. Jerry, you asked the question.
I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay.
Yes, we teach people.
No, now that I've listened to Jim, this guy's on the money. I mean, I'm learning a lot, and I like it.
Okay.
My previous questions were all going to be more along the animal antagonistic style that you encourage, and I've just got nothing like that for him right now.
Well, I think
I'm going to ask a question. Do you coach? So now we talked about how you coach the media relations and setting up the plant and stuff like that. What about these guys finding new jobs? And I'm specific. Yeah, I have some specific interest there. But go ahead. You start talking. How do you help people find new jobs? Resumes and everything. Go ahead.
Right. It initially starts with career life planning, and we go through some assessment stuff for all the employees. I don't care if they're the plant manager or the janitor. Figure out what they want to be when they grow up. Determine whether or not they want to work for a large company, a medium-sized company, a smaller company. Educate them that the chances of working for another large company are not great. 74% of the people that work in America today work for a company with 40 or less people. So let's start targeting smaller employers. Do you want to start your own business? Do you want to start a tackle and bait shop, helicopter tours, dry cleaner, whatever it is? Depending on that path, we then get into resume construction. And I've seen resume construction change a lot. We tell them typically the average resume reader is looking at a resume from 7 to 12 seconds. And in that 7 to 12 seconds, they're making a value judgment. They don't care about a results-oriented team player that gets along well with people. It means nothing. It's fluff. What we want is value. And I tell them, when I'm looking at a consultant or I'm going to hire somebody, I know someone's going to come in, they're going to drink my Diet Coke, they're going to use my toilet paper, they're going to want a new laptop every 18 months. And what do I get for that? So you have to be impersonal. They don't care about you. You are a piece of equipment, and they want an ROI. So we start out very simply from resume construction, from a templating standpoint, name up top. And what they're looking for is this person black, white, local? Do I have to worry about transportation? Can I get any inference of any bang for my buck on AAP? They want to look to the left. They want to see an email. Make sure you can turn on a computer. They want to look to the right and see one phone number, not two, just one.
Are you teaching this to them, or are you doing this for them?
We're teaching it to them.
Okay. So you're going to teach an assembly line, plug and hole worker to write a resume.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised how close the gap is between a materials manager and a production shop floor person relative to computer skills.
But I have a question. At that level, aren't there plenty of state programs out there that provide the same service for quote-unquote free?
Yeah, quote unquote free. Tell me about it. I pay my competition. I fund my competition. I spend time overcoming that hurdle quite a bit, and I just let the results speak for themselves. They don't do a good job compared to me and compared to other outplacement companies because they're punching a clock. They're not going to go in there on second and third shift. They're not going to really go out and do job development and identify companies in the community. They don't have relationships with VPs of HR, if I'm working with an executive or a shop floor person, where the project manager has gone out and literally knocked on doors to introduce him or herself to the HR manager at that facility. So I think from a resume construction standpoint, they're not as accomplished, and they certainly don't understand the requirements around personal branding and integrating social media into your job search. The hourly people love Facebook. They network like crazy on it. They find a lot of jobs through it. A lot of people, hourly people, are migrating now to Twitter. They're finding a lot of jobs through there. They're following companies. They're following people through their church. They're developing relationships there, building those networks, and landing jobs there. So that resume construction, that's
Let me ask you
a
couple of questions about resumes right now, and then what you just said about social media. Did you tell me yesterday Monday, that you always want to show a result? You said if you've got a responsibility, don't just list it as – tell me about that.
That's a good catch. We believe that if you – every bullet has to have a measurement, and what that does is it drives control to a certain extent, or more control to a certain extent, to the interviewee. So if I put on my chronological resume, I've got a bullet point there, and it says Jim was responsible for, the interviewer then asks, okay, what was the result, or basically, so what? But if I put on the resume, Jim was responsible for X, resulting in Y, Jim was accountable for, resulting in, it then takes the what was the first question, the second level question. Okay, Jim, I see you were responsible for, it resulted in why. How did you do that? And what comes out of that answer is my value. So I'm putting my candidate in position to drive a value-based answer off of one bullet, and also to give the interviewer an idea of how I accomplished it behaviorally.
Let me just step there. I asked you. You advertised on your. You told me on your DM on Twitter. You said I'm happy to get the feedback. I learn from feedback. And you said somebody called you and told you. I think she said it on the phone that your people had good resumes, but they weren't interviewing well. Is that what happened?
That did happen, and it was valid feedback. I mean, we were doing a great job constructing value-based resumes, but we weren't converting it. It was like we were getting all the way down the field or getting all the way to the goal or the hoop or whatever, but we weren't putting it in the basket or in the net or in the end zone. And so we started tweaking our interviewing process and incorporating that resume construction piece into the interview prep. And basically,
let me just ask, that's when you started – saying that you have to show a result beside the responsibility, and then that helps the person in the interview talk about that responsibility. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Every bullet has to have a metric.
So, but what job? Some jobs,
that's
a secretarial
good.
Job. What's the metric? What's the metric on the secretarial job?
Well, a secretarial or an administrative job certainly has outputs. Okay, if I'm an administrative person, I'm responsible for scheduling. I'm responsible for coordination of meetings. I'm responsible for facilitating setup of this, that, or the other, making sure that people get their messages. And so I have internal customers.
But
and
that's
so if
just
I can,
doing your job. That's not an achievement. That's part of your job description, isn't it?
I agree. It's part of the job description, but it is measurable.
How's it measurable? First tell me how's it measurable, then you can argue with her. That measurable?
Well, if Jim is a secretary and he's responsible for setting up four regional director-level meetings throughout the United States over the course of a year, and that process typically took a week to deliver, and I was able to deliver it after doing something or improving the process in some way, I was able to improve it by one day and make that done in 4 days. Or I was able to look at an agenda for a meeting and make a suggestion to the VP that if we move the agenda item from here to here, the meeting would be done in a day and a half and not 2 days.
What if you just did a great – what if it's due and being done in a great way right now and you just maintained the great way they were doing it already and you did that for 10 years?
That's
what's
part
the
of
metric
the
you're going to – what's the metric that you can attach to that? I don't see how you can.
Well,
but
if you do it the same way,
there's a difference. There's a difference. That one is part of doing the job, and two is improving something. And he's right.
Yeah, but let's. Yeah, well, some jobs can't be improved. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
But
well,
if you're
those,
right
those
wrong.
Animal, I would just suggest that those jobs that can't be improved, or people that manage towards that end or perform towards that end, will be seeing my company shortly.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Okay. Yeah, you want to argue with him a bit, Janice? Or Boy Wonder? Come on. Where are you?
No,
what,
right here.
Still
I'm absorbing
want,
it like a sponge.
You don't want to say anything nasty to him? Come on. Your
yeah.
I want to know what you get for $95.
Yeah, I gotta wonder where the value in is that in that is.
Oh, that's your new business, right?
Right.
Career food. Do you want to talk about that? We don't have to. We can.
No. It makes people are asking the question, and it's a good question.
Okay, go ahead.
OPIs.
Go ahead. Sorry.
OPI is still the bread and butter. We're an outplacement company. But I think outplacement, unlike search, has been allowed to sort of just exist without being accountable for a pretty long period of time. We got a lot of dinosaurs in my industry. We got a lot of people that kind of done it because that's the way they've done it for the last 15, 20 years. And
what do I get for $95?
Well,
he's getting there with it.
Well, what's happened is that... 15 years ago, if I needed somebody, I called up my favorite search guy, and I paid him 25% or whatever the first year salary. Monster comes along, post jobs. Now you don't even need Monster. You can just put a link up on a tweet. Outplacement has not...
I wish it was that easy, but...
Okay, but Outplacement has not absorbed any of the technology. They haven't stayed current. They're still loaded with bricks and mortar, and literally, as organizations. And what organizations I sense are doing is they're saying, look... We're gonna go through some downsizing, and we look at all these people. You know what? They're responsible enough to get here. We make them awfully responsible when they are here. We ask them to manage their own 401k savings plans. They manage their life's change status events. They change their health, their life, their group, their dental, their vision by themselves at all levels of the organization. You know what? They ought to be responsible for managing themselves out. So we're not going to do outplacement anymore. And so I think outplacement is going to become more of a retail type of business in 5 years. And so Career Foo is essentially a watered-down version of an outplacement model where, you know, someone can – we've built some interesting code behind Career Foo, but, you know, 19 different industry buckets, about 1,100 different professional position descriptions. You go through a series of questionnaires. Takes you about 40 minutes. And so they're either text or multiple choice or yes, no. And then you get the basic contents of a resume. In the end, spit that to us. We've got some people here that can crank those things pretty fast, and you get 2 hours of one-on-one time with a consultant. And we have a job or a data bank where we store all of your employee information. You can upload new insurance information from your new employer, your performance appraisals, all that kind of stuff, and you send it into Career Foo. And so we'll see if it works. What I know is that outplacement today won't exist the way it does in 5 years, and I got 5 kids and a wife that likes to drive BMW, so I got to keep working.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you measure success in outplacement, though? How if you have a client,
yeah.
If you have a client, and you know how do you know whether you're doing a good job or not?
Well, people are landing jobs.
Do you base it?
Well, we base it on our primary metric is landings, is what we call people getting jobs. And our average landing time is 84 days from the time we get them till the time they walk into their new place and we start new employee assimilation with them from the sidelines.
How long do you stick with them?
We will tell, and I've been beaten up by my attorney over the years for saying lifetime membership. But typically what happens is we tell people, we'll work with you as long as you're willing to get a job. There's been plenty of times people go sailing into a port because it's stormy at sea, and I tell them, you know, don't take that job, and they do. And then they call back up and say, wow, Jim, that sucks, man. I got to get out of here. Can you help me again? And well, sure. Because more often than not, it all comes out in the wash. Some people come through and they'll absorb maybe 16, 20 hours of senior consultancy time, and a different executive comes through and they only need 4, 6, 8 hours. So in the end of it, we make money doing it. But the average landing time is 84 days, and that's typically over about 5,000 people a year. And that's a wide bucket of people. You got the shop floor up to the million-dollar-a-year CEO-type people that get shot. And so that's a tough metric. You also get people that go from long-term disability to total and permanent disability, people that retire, people that just drop off, drop out.
How many candidates are you managing or responsible for now? Like right now, how many do you have that are in the search mode that you've been paid?
Probably about 1,600, 1,700 that are, okay. You know, we got some carryover stuff from last year, some stuff that's just starting up. Suncoke, which is a big sub of Sunoco Inc., is moving a bunch of people from one place to Chicago, and some big healthcare consolidations that are going on.
How do you make it possible for recruiters to connect with those people?
Well, we take them through as a part of the outplacement program. You know, here are the major job boards. Here are search firms on our website that we think do a good job. Here are niche job boards that we think do a good job. And I love recruiters. I mean, recruiters have helped my metrics tremendously.
Okay.
Over the years. So, I mean, anytime anybody wants to get good people that I think, anyway, are going to have a nice polished resume, they're going to interview reasonably well, and they're free because we're getting paid by, say, Suncoke in this particular instance, and they got whatever 30 or 40 people. I'm not like a Lee Hecht or Wright Management that's got a Deco and Manpower on the other side. I'm getting paid by Suncoke. You can keep all the money. Just get them landed.
Okay. And what would be the best way to connect with you on that?
Let's go to the website, myopi.us. You'll see me there. I'm the Kill Bill looking guy. And go ahead and shoot me an email or give me a call or whatever.
You know what? I feel bad. We're going into Jerry's time, and you came alive, you know, in the last half hour of the show. And I'm really getting – I have three questions. I'll see if we can answer them now in Jerry's time, or we'll leave them for another time. But you said that people are getting jobs from Twitter and Facebook, a lot of jobs. We're shocked. I'm shocked to hear that. I wanted to ask you about retraining. You just said you're working with people who don't even know how to read. And secondly, what about the future in the United States when it sounds like all of your clients, your whole business is based on shipping away American jobs? Do you want to talk about those things now, or should I have to have you back?
Well, first of all, I'd love to come back anytime. As far as Twitter, I think we're finding people that are landing jobs not necessarily utilizing Twitter to get to a search firm. What they're doing is they're using Twitter to talk to people out in their community that are, you know, they're friends with parents on the same ball team, or they go to the same church, part of the same, you know, industry association. And there's a wonderful new thing out there, and you guys got to check this out. It's called Go Grab Lunch. And you basically say, this is what I do. My lunch schedule is open on these particular dates, and here's where I like to eat. I like to eat at Panera Bread or wherever. And people that fit your profile will then say, yeah, okay, cool. I'll meet you there at 11:30 on Thursday. And so we're seeing Twitter network into that and to Go Grab Lunch quite a lot. So it's really not a reach out to, and Facebook the same thing, not LinkedIn with my crowd for the most part. Sure, our executives use LinkedIn, but our crowd is mostly Facebook and Twitter. So that we are seeing a positive impact with that. The next
really?
Question was jobs going overseas. Yeah, there's a lot of jobs coming to the United States, and mostly by foreign-owned companies. I would suggest anybody that wants to drive from Nashville to Mobile, Alabama, will run across Mercedes and Hyundai. They'll run across a number of large automotive suppliers that support those organizations. Chattanooga's now in Tennessee with all their supply base. Kia introduced their first car in the United States in 1999. They now have one of the largest manufacturing facilities just outside of Auburn University, just down the road. Every mile for about 12 or 13 miles on the way in, and then 12 or 13 miles to the west, is a large manufacturing facility, maybe 300,000 square feet plus, that has something SL America, U.S., you know, Corp. And they're all South Korean auto suppliers that are popping up there. Amazon is growing like crazy. So there's different industries, and they're hiring people from here, so I'm sure we're going to hear about them firing people.
Last thing I asked about was retraining, yeah. Retraining, and I have to go to Jerry. What about these guys who, you know, they're not going to be they can't read, they're not going to be computer programmers, or what are you retraining people for? Does that have a future?
Well, I think there are needs. I guess what I was roundabout way saying is we shut a big Ford Taurus plant in Atlanta about 2-3 years ago, whatever it was. It was about 1,700-1,800 people. And there were a bunch of people in there that didn't have terrific literacy skills. But they could run a drill press. They could run a lathe. They could weld. They could build stuff. And Hyundai came here, and they didn't have a whole lot of people that could do that. So they literally put together relocation packages for hourly employees to move them from Atlanta, Georgia, to the middle of Alabama in Montgomery, Greenville, Alabama, just north of it. And we put, I bet you probably, they got a maintenance department, probably 400 people there. I'll bet you 300 of them are from Ford Taurus plant in Atlanta. And I know some of those guys couldn't read anything other than a blueprint.
Okay, so that's not retraining, but we'll leave that for another time. Your name is Jim Tait, T-A-I-T. Your company is OP. What's it called?
Outsourcing Partners, Inc., OPI.us.
Okay, and your website is
HTTP,
myopi.us.
Yep.
Thank you. Jim, if you're still here, you got to go. Jerry, over to you!
Hey, good show. I thought. Anybody still here?
Yeah,
that was
here.
A great show.
Yeah. Okay, real quick, who's here? I heard you, Travis. Who else?
Dave Manister.
Kathy Manish.
We didn't do Kathy's Corner.
No, it's okay. We kind of did. I said I didn't understand.
Yeah. Who else is here?
A. Stringer.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
All right, Jerry. You done flaming me now?
What's that?
Done flaming me now?
I wasn't flaming you. I was just challenging you, Mike. Come on now.
All right.
Did I hurt your feelings?
Sounds like it.
Let's hash this out right now. I'm sorry. I know a lot of you guys look up to me, and I shouldn't do
you
that.
Never start. You never start a hash out with "I'm sorry, Jerry."
All right, who else? Okay, well, that's about it then, huh? Man, small crowd, eh? I thought that there were a few more people here, but hey, so what? I like the show. It's nice to hear a guy know what he's talking about, and especially something that I don't really know too much about that whole world. I've always recruited, a lot of my clients have always been these automotive companies. And so I could picture exactly the kind of stuff he's talking about and the companies he was mentioning that he worked with and, you know, plant closings. And, you know, I spent a lot of time working with, you know, recruiting people from one plant that were getting let go and moving them across the Midwest or, you know, from Detroit to Grand Rapids. So it's kind of reminiscent just listening to the other side of the aisle there. How about some quick scores, Travis?
Yeah, I will give it. I'll give both of them an eight. I'll give both of them an eight. I thought this was the first time since I've been listening that Animal was like truly had went through some prep and was ready and kept things in line. I thought it went really well.
Now, there were some people mentioning that they didn't think Animal should prep. I wouldn't know why.
Well, you know what? I think, you know, if you're running something where you have a guest, it would be a good idea to know who you're talking to and why.
Yeah. Does anybody want to disagree with that, Kathy?
You know what? I rethought it, Jerry. I think it was an industry that maybe Animal wasn't as informed about, so maybe he did need to do prep work just so that he'd be able to ask questions that he felt were pertinent. So I could see why he did that now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a niche. It's definitely a niche market, so I could see why Animal would want to do.
Yeah, he sounds like a good guy to connect with, and I'm most certainly going to do that this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm thinking I should too.
What are your scores, Kathy?
I'm gonna have to give a 9 and a 9. I think they were both. It was very, very informative.
Yep. I'm gonna jump in real quick with my scores. I'm gonna give the guest a 9 and Animal an 8. A Stringer, my dear friend in Jersey.
You know what? I agree with your scores, a 9 for the guest and an 8 for Animal. I really do think that he did a good job prepping for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show started out a little slow, but really knocked out with a bang. And one more thing I want to say. This is absolutely not a criticism of Animal, but in the 6 or 7 or 8 months or whatever that I've been listening to the show,
mm-hmm.
I've seen quite a change in Animal's demeanor and in the show overall.
Mm.
I listened to the last few shows, and I think this is more of your standard informational radio show, which is fine, but it's just different than what Animal was like 6 months ago, and I just wonder what brought on the change.
You like a little more heat, a little more flame, don't you?
You've known me for 15 years, Jerry. You know I love that.
Last week it was that way, Mike. Poor Rayanne got really hurt.
Oh, she did not.
Oh, well, she kind of did.
Yeah, I don't know. Dave Manister.
Fireworks.
Dave,
yeah.
Manister.
I was only on for the last half of the show. From what I hear, that was the better half. But
it was
pretty awesome. I would give it a 9 and a 9. All of the complaints I had last time about him not really adjusting to someone who is a little higher level than his norm, he kind of adjusted to this time, and I really liked it.
Yeah, he's clearly dating up with this kind of thing.
I love it.
Howard Stern to Rush Limbaugh.
So you missed his monologue then. Is that some wacky stuff? Did you guys hear that? The letter that the guy sent him?
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
Everybody wants him to post that letter on his blog, so.
Jerry, I missed it. Can you take 2 seconds and just say what it was?
Oh, it was some guy that researches cult recruiting. And he singled Animal out as clearly having subliminal messages. It's one of the few monologues I would say you've got to just hear this. Some guy wrote him a letter and just went off on him.
Are we all going to be living in a compound on Utah drinking Kool-Aid with Animal?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, with subliminal vibrations. You got to just check it out.
As long as Cassie's there.
One thing I'll say about the Animal is he's entirely liminal.
He's what?
Completely liminal. Nothing subliminal about him.
All right, everybody. Well, I've got, I'm just in the middle of a ton of stuff today, so you're all free to keep on talking, but I'm going to keep moving on. But thanks for hanging out and helping us give Animal a score, and it looks like this might be one of his better scores, you know, in quite a while. So thanks a lot, and I hope you all have a successful afternoon and rest of the week.
Thank you, sir.
Bye,
take it easy. Hey, Travis, give me a call.
Yeah. All right.
Give me a call, man.